And you know, you can do many things that grown-ups can't do anymore. For one thing, you can pretend you're all grown up. And then when you finish pretending, you can be just the way you are.
I love you, you love me, we're a happy...
Shut the fuck up!
First of all, you say just have a conversation with your kids and ask them, how does the violence make you feel? Does it make you feel frightened, nervous, anxious? Just talk to them about it.
It is. It is just that easy just to have a conversation with them, because you don't know what's going through their mind when they see something like that. You never know when they're going to end up at someone's house or a friend's house or something, and they either find something on the internet or they actually watch the movie. You're going to want to have a conversation with your child before they're put in that situation where they see an awful movie like Saw or something like that, and then show them what a real scary movie's like a Poltergeist or like we said, The Birds, or you know, Psycho, where it just was, you know, so scary.
Welcome to Speak All Evil, the podcast you were warned about. I'm Trent, here with Kevin, Kat, and Dave. Hey guys, how's it going?
Hello.
Great.
We are here at Camp Kilburn for Kids, where we've been volunteering all week. This week, a very special Speak All Evil. We are talking kids, and we found some. We got two kids in the house. Half of this show has bread, and they've brought their kids to the show.
I prefer Spawn, but yes, welcome Connie to the show.
Hello.
Hey, Connie.
Hi.
And I brought along Nora June, who is really excited and very nervous.
Hello.
Hi, Nora.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm nervous too, if that helps.
You can't possibly do worse than us kids, trust me.
Yeah.
Starting with Nora, what is your scariest scenario or your scariest type of horror movie? So, like, is it home invasion where someone's trying to break into your house and kill you? Or is it ghosts? Or is it zombies? Or being at a camp? With, like, a killer.
I feel like, I don't know. Like, just it find, like, the thing that, like, home invasion is scary. I don't mind paranormal stuff. Like, I find it fascinating. But, like, home invasion is pretty scary. I mean, like psychological stuff is always scary. Like, just, like, playing with your mind and stuff. Like, using yourself against you is, like, scary.
Yeah.
So, Connie, what are you scared of?
I'm scared of... Okay, this is kind of weird, but I'm scared of, like... creepy old people sometimes. Like, that's my fear. Like, I'm afraid that, like, sometimes there's something in my house that I don't know about.
Yeah.
Like, there's some creepy person, like, just living where I live, but I don't know.
Yeah.
And I'm also kind of scared of, like, that, like, demonic feeling. Like, I don't know, like, there's some movies that's so dark, and it's so, like, I don't know, like, anything to do with kind of like the devil-y, like people worshiping the devil and them doing like weird satanic rituals, like that really scares me.
Well, you always tell me that you think that an old lady is going to come out from under your bed and lick
my hand. That is my worst fear.
Oh,
you know when you like
so
dangle
specific.
Yeah, you know when you like dangle your hand or your leg off the bed.
Yeah.
And what I always feel like something's either going
to
touch it or like lick it. Like,
oh
just, like,
God.
A little thing from under my bed, like, creepy, shriveled up something.
Or like,
and
yeah.
That scares me every time.
Well, now
your mothers
I'm
can't
scared
get
of
off
that.
The toilet.
I was always
no,
scared.
No, it's not about, it's a threat. I just don't want it to happen.
I was always scared of, like, if I, like, went to the bathroom, like, something coming up from the toilet and, like, either, like, biting
snakes.
Me or, like, dragging me down. Like, that's just, like...
Oh, that happens more than you think.
No, stop.
That's nice. I also had this time period where I thought, like, a clown was going to come out of the sink. I thought a clown was going to come out of the sink, so I was scared of the sink for a while.
You never know. You never know. That could happen.
It's just a good conversation to have with your child so they understand that it's not real, that it's fantasy, and that they don't need to be worried about that that's going to happen to them.
No, but you know, this, I just want you guys to know that this is all fun and games, these horror movies. It's just a big fantasy world, and it's fun to like go there every once in a while and be like, wow, look at all this crazy stuff. But this and much worse stuff will happen to you in your life. You need to be prepared for anything.
Yeah.
You're right.
I would impress upon you the same point. What you are going to go through is nothing, you know. These movies pale in comparison, so keep that in mind.
The thing with horror movies and kids is you don't realize, I'll watch a movie and be like, oh, that was pretty tame, until I watch it with my kid. And then all these things that I never even remembered, we've become numb to nipples and beheadings or whatever it is, you know, like I don't realize it until I watch the movie with her. It's like, oh, it's R, it's gonna be fine, it's not that bad. And then
it's all fine until all those therapy bills later. Well, Dave, I think Dave got Connie into horror much earlier than I was able to get Nora into horror.
Yeah.
And
yeah, it was pretty early.
And I was pretty jealous. You know, her mom is a pretty big Brady cat. Ah! She had a really traumatizing incident with the Texas Chainsaw Massacre at a very young age. And I'll blame my brother-in-law for that. And it was really frowned upon. So, you know, last week we did the Pets episode, and I mentioned that Gremlins was literally the movie that I tricked her into watching something scary with. And I'm jealous that Dave was able to indoctrinate Connie at a much younger age, because I feel like I have so much to make up for now with my daughter, and I failed.
Well, she's older.
It was also forced at first.
Yeah, she was kicking and screaming.
I just I was not into it. I did not want anything to do with it. Nothing to do with it.
I get it. I understand.
I'll stick with My Little Pony. Thanks.
Yeah, I just want to clear up before we go any further. I don't have kids, and I have nothing to do with any kids watching anything at all. None of this is me, just so everybody's clear.
Great. Thank you.
If you had a kid, you would not show them horror movies?
Well, who knows? I mean, that's such a hypothetical, I can't say. I'm just saying, I have nothing to do today, as of today, I have nothing to do with any kids.
It sounds so judgy.
Trent, if you had a kid, would you still have a majestic portrait of the human centipede on your wall?
Who knows? Who knows what could have been?
I think it's important for kids to know what's out there. Like, you gotta be careful. Don't talk to strangers or someone will make the human centipede out of you and your friends.
Oh my god.
That hits home. What was your first horror movie, Connie?
I don't know. I think it was that movie where there was like the... It was like silly. It was like they had ghosts. What is it called?
Frighteners.
Oh, yeah. Great one.
Mm-hmm.
Your first one, I think, Gremlins?
I didn't like have a first horror movie because I would just like sit and like watch what you were watching.
Yeah, it's true. The Nora, I got her watching Gremlins, and then it was a big thing for my birthday. She asked what I wanted, and I said, I want you to sit and watch it, the 2017 one with me. And then the podcast happened, and she would just be. It was before the podcast, but as the podcast has gone on, she has just been forced as I take over the living room television, watching, you know, the hundreds of movies that we've now watched to talk about. And then one morning, I wasn't even for the show. For some reason, we were up before Mom, and we just sat and watched The Sixth Sense together. And then she was kind of off and running. You know, I'd get texts from her, like, what horror movie should my friends watch? And, you know, they're watching The Conjuring, and... You know, now this week I forced her to watch three relatively violent films. So we're on the right path.
You know, the trailers are an important part of showing kids and getting them to watch horror movies, because you play in the trailer, and I think we ought to make misleading trailers for dads like us who want to trick their kids into watching these scary movies. Yeah. Kat, you don't have kids. What did you do with them? How did you dispose of them?
I went for a wood chipper approach. You know,
oh, that's
I feel
good.
Like that really grinds up them child bones real good.
Yeah, you gotta get rid of something small.
Cat put her kids in the pet cemetery and she just keeps killing them over and over again.
Yeah. I've watched a lot of Forensic Files, so I know all the different ways to do it.
So what order do you guys want to start in tonight?
I think that, I mean, I'd leave it up to the kids.
What did you guys think was the scariest?
The scariest?
Let's just talk about the two main movies. We didn't get through Children of the Corn, the very popular kids-themed horror movie, but we started watching it. It was just so terrible in many ways. More ways that we have time to talk about in the hour or so that we have our show. So we went with Becky, which is relatively new, and we went with Goodnight Mommy, which is relatively disturbing.
Yeah. I think Becky for me, yeah, was scarier. It was more scarier throughout. I feel like Goodnight Mommy had more of like a weird vibe to it the whole
it
time.
It was like
that
eerie.
Was kind of unsettling. Yeah.
It was more eerie.
But I think Becky had like more points where you were like screaming and you're like, oh my god.
Yeah, like what is going on? It was more gore, yeah, in Becky too.
Yeah.
I like to pronounce it Becca.
Becca.
It came out in 2020, but obviously it was made in 2019. You don't expect this to be a good horror movie because it has Kevin James, King of Queens, Mall Cop, Paul Blart, and Joel McHale, Talk Soup. And it's also made by Redbox, like the company that still slangs the movies at the supermarket and outside the CVS or whatever. It was an original movie made by them, which I didn't even know they made movies. So this is kind of out of left field. And Connie, you can talk about it. What's Becky about?
Becky is basically about this girl recently had her mother pass away, and the father is now dating someone else, and they go up to a camp all together. And then, like, these guys break in looking for something. And I thought it was really good. I thought, you know, it was kind of weird that the main character, for me, was one of the most unlikable characters. Like, since the beginning, it was like, why is she treating her dad so bad? But I think that's weird how they chose the kind of most annoying character to be the main character.
It's pretty much like a revenge,
yeah,
movie, but like from a kid's perspective.
Well, yeah. Home Alone, but horror.
This movie was great. Dave watched this like right out the gate. You know, supposed to hit theaters. They had to release it to streaming because of COVID. It's a little bit of a steep rental, but you know, $6.99 to get a fresh movie while you're stuck at home, I don't think is that bad. I love seeing Kevin James in his first dramatic role of his entire career. And you know, he was okay. I would say he was a little uneven. And Connie, you may not like the character of Becky, but Lulu Wilson is a monster in this role. Yeah. She knocks it out of the park, and this girl is an up-and-coming, if not already established, scream queen. She's already starred in Ouija, Origin of Evil, Annabelle Creation. She was in The Haunting of Hill House. So she's killing the horror circuit right now. And despite what you think of the movie or what you think of the character, she has some unbelievably horrific death scenes,
yeah,
that she oversees in this movie. What did you think?
I really liked it, except I just didn't like all the blood. I'm not a big gore fan.
Yeah.
The death scenes were insane, but they were cool. I just found it like they jumped into like most of the action pretty early on, and like it was just kind of like, here are characters, now this is what's happening.
I think that you should look at this movie, both of you, as a manual, a handbook, if you will, as what you need to do. None of us, me and Kevin, and you can feel free to save their lives too, Trent and Kat, but we are not dying by the fire like a s'mores. You guys need to save us much before that.
Yeah, okay.
Definitely.
Will do.
I think the way Becky was mean in the beginning of the movie kind of like helped establish her character. Because mm-hmm. I think that's why she was kind of unlikable in the beginning, because she was kind of like rude and like kind of dark, but that ended up helping her at the end because she was more aggressive and, you know, smart.
Yeah. They were like setting her up to be this like big bad. Like, also, she's like the hero.
Yeah.
Kind of.
What'd you think, Kat?
I had very high hopes for Kevin James as a villain, because I was like, it's gonna be fine. Like, everything's gonna be great. It started off, like, interesting. He definitely had that, you know, scary Nazi vibe going on. I liked his beard a lot. I thought that was a nice, you know, deviation from his normal King of Queens garb. But he just, like, I feel like he wasn't in it enough. Like, his role, like, his scenes that he played were very, like, all of them just seemed like the same. It was, like, the same scene over and over again. And I was, like, very confused about, like, his motivation. Like, I feel like I didn't really get an answer. Maybe I stopped paying attention. I was just lost by a Kevin James. But I didn't really understand what his what the key unlocked. I don't know.
Dude, it's like you love Lord of the Rings. I mean, how can you go along with that for, I mean, what is it, 9 hours of film talking about we need the ring? I mean, they need the key.
We're not going to, well, you can't get started on Lord of the Rings right now. There's not enough time. I can't.
There's never enough time.
That'll be its own episode. But yeah, I was definitely surprised by the amount of gore. I feel like I'm usually not one that needs to look away / screams at the television when I'm by myself in the room, but the eyeball scene was probably the worst thing I've seen in a while. So his eyeball is keyed, but Becky keys him in the eye. And then his friend's like, oh, it's your eye's ruined. We got to cut it out. Ruined. And so it's like them like he's like trying to cut it with scissors. And then he finally just like puts his head down on the cutting board and gets a huge like butcher knife. And it's just like
it's the little
like,
the no. little plastic scissors.
The kid scissors. Like,
yeah.
Nah. Yeah. The safety scissors.
That, this movie definitely has the best use of rulers, protractors, kids scissors, pencils.
Pencils.
Yeah.
Hate. Trent, what did you think of Becky?
I absolutely loved Becky. I was so excited, and I've seen the hype about this movie, and I agree with you, Kevin. The pricier rental than we're used to was well worth it this godforsaken year. I haven't been to the movies since February. And to see something that is a would-be theatrical feature at home was really, really nice. And I loved it. This is a straight-up horror movie. I didn't even realize it was Kevin James until I just happened to be watching the closing credits and doing something else and noticed, wait, Kevin James? I thought, not the comedian guy. But then I was like, wait a minute, the guy with the beard? Could it be? I thought he was amazing. I loved him, and I loved how he played it. Like, so, his style is so deadpan. I absolutely loved that. The eyeball, very important body part in horror. Eyeballs are one of the top body parts that you have to work with. As far as lessons, a couple things stood out to me for the younger gals tonight, Nora and Connie. When Becky is on the walkie-talkie with the bad guy, and he tricks her, and she slips up, remember that?
Yeah, I have that written down, I think.
Yeah, don't do all that. Right. Don't let the guy trick you. And also, if we're ever in this situation together, which isn't terribly far-fetched, we could be at a camp sometime or something, and your parents can speak for themselves, but if I'm in the house with the bad guys, and you're outside, and the bad guys don't know you're out there, just run as fast as you can
toward
to the next house, even if it's a mile away.
To the next house.
You could be...
No, run as fast as you can towards them with a sharp object.
But there's three of them.
No. See, no. If it's me... You can speak for yourself. You have lots of time to rear your child.
Don't tell me
that, I'm just telling... I'm talking to the girls straight for me. If it's me, just go get the help. Don't try to... save me, because by the time you could have gotten to the house, she could have been at the next house, even though it was a mile. She could have been there in like 20
yeah.
minutes.
Yeah, I agree with that, actually.
But
yeah,
they threatened the dad's life, too. That's why she came back.
Yeah, that's why she...
Yeah. Well, it would be easier if it was me. That's what I'm saying. So.
Uncle Trent.
So talk about the big softie that you have such a...
Oh, my God.
You're so excited about.
So, like, the really abnormally large dude who's, like, his, like, minion, but, like, he refers to him as, like, his kid, children. Like, I knew, like, right off the bat that he was gonna be, like, one of, like, the soft one that's, like, go get help and don't listen to this Nazi dude. Like, he gave off that, like, cartoon character vibe that, like, he looks big and scary, but, like, you know, he's gonna be, like, well, like, the softie that's, like, regrets his decisions and doesn't want Becky to make the same mistakes he did.
Very astute observation.
He reminded me of, like, in Looney Tunes, there's that abominable snowman. He's like, I'll hug him and squeeze him and name him George. But he's, like, really...
The BFG.
The BFG.
The big friendly giant. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that character.
I don't even think we've set this movie up properly, where basically what happens is a family goes to their summer camp. It's... You know, you'd mentioned it, Connie, that she recently lost her mom, her dad, she's with her dad, shows up with her new girlfriend, she's pissed, and then for some reason, this Nazi breaks out of prison with some of his minions, shows up at the house, and they're like, give me this goddamn key.
We never know what the key is.
And I have so many notes in gigantic letters, what is the key?
Yes.
Yeah.
What is the key? So I was looking it up. And what the key is, in cinematic terms, is called a MacGuffin.
A McDonald's Bacon and Egg McMuffin is a freshly cracked egg, a toasted English muffin, bacon and cheese. It's very tasty and just a
MacGuffin, which is an object or device in a movie or book that serves merely as a trigger for the plot. And Alfred Hitchcock had this great description of what a MacGuffin is, referring to one of his movies that had something to do with spies, where he basically said the MacGuffin is the thing that the spies are after, but the audience simply doesn't care. And I don't know if that made me satisfied that they never explained the key, or if it made me even more angry that you put this enticing... I still sit here wondering, what did the goddamn key go to? I don't know if I buy into the MacGuffin.
I picture the
theory.
End of Indiana Jones.
I think part of it's kind of cool because, like, I think part of it leaves it up to the viewer to make their own, like, kind of assumptions what it could be. Because after the movie ended, we went back and forth saying, like, what if it's this? What, it could be that. And I feel like that's kind of cool, too, because it makes your imagination go farther than maybe even the director or whoever wrote the movie could.
So both me and you, we were saying that, like, both of us thought that, like, the dad has something to do with the key. Like, it just kind of gave off that vibe that, like, because, like, the second, like, they got in, they were kind of, like, targeting the dad more and, like, bringing him out instead of, like, the girlfriend or the kid, like, bringing him out to, like, the fire and stuff. And it just kind of, like, gave off that vibe that, like, the dad had something to do with the key. I mean, they never, like, established that he does have something to do with the key, but, like...
I disagree.
I still believe that he would have something to do with
the key. I think the mom had something to do with the key.
Me too. And I think the daughter knew about what the key does, and the mom and her knew.
I think the daughter's a Nazi.
I was...
Maybe.
I was going to ask you guys... I was going to ask you guys because... I am not convinced at the end of the movie. I was not at all convinced that Becky is not a little Nazi.
I don't think she's necessarily a good guy. I think she's the main character, but I don't know if she's a good person.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, when the big, abnormally large dude...
Apex.
Was like
Apex.
Was, like, talking to her in the field, like, saying, like, don't make the same mistakes I do and follow this crazy dude. Like, I think he knew, like, he saw something in Becky that, like, he saw in himself and was like, okay, look, this kid has killed a bunch of people already. and I don't want you to go on this path to being like this major murderer. But like, I feel like she'll always have that like inside of her. Where she,
yeah.
Mm. Cuckoo.
Yeah, he was trying to nurture her, and she just murked him.
I mean, even at the beginning, she was cold to the dad. She didn't do any different at the end when she was cold to the guy being nice.
Just remember, before there was Karen, there was Becky. Okay. All in <snack. laughs>
Lest we forget. Yeah, I didn't feel very satisfied at the end. Like, usually, you guys know I'm all about a revenge story, you know. Mm-hmm. But this time I was just like, it wasn't the same. Like, I didn't feel connected to her because she went a little crazy pants.
It's kind of cool when you're kind of cheering for someone the whole time, and then at the end they flip it on you and you're like, wow, I was, cheering for the wrong person. I'm a horrible judge of character.
Well, what else is new?
And at the end when, like, she's talking to, like, the, like, police or, like, the, like, sheriff or whatever, and she's like, she says she doesn't remember everything. She's obviously lying. She remembers everything.
Yeah.
And it just kind of gives off that, like, well, you're insane.
Yeah.
You know, I really like the Becky versus Karen analogy, because the emo girl that hates everybody for no reason, will give nobody a chance.
Yeah.
Just has a bad attitude because her music told her to. That's kind of like the Karen of the the younger kid.
Oh, I feel very attacked right now.
I was talking about Connie.
What?
All right, so after being revolted against for my original selection of Children of the Corn, which I admit, I had not watched in a very long time.
It wasn't bad, it was just not good.
we talked and we decided that Goodnight Mommy would be a great selection, and boy was it. So this is a relatively recent movie. This is 2014. It's an Austrian film, and it was written and directed by the duo of Veronica Franz and Severin Fiala, who just brought us another great horror movie, The Lodge, which I highly recommend you go watch. It's a seemingly simple premise where two twin boys have their mother come back after some facial surgery, and her head is all wrapped up, and they are convinced that she is not their mother. I love this. I actually, Trent, I believe you and I watched this together right when it came out. I think this was one of our, like, midday let's rent a horror movie we've heard a lot about. And I remember being blown away. I honestly don't know that I'd revisited this since then. So, Nora actually just watched this movie earlier today.
Yes, I did.
What did you think?
I think it was good. I don't know. It kind of seemed more like, it was more eerie than like scary, I guess. Mm-hmm. The whole thing just leaves you wondering, like, is it their mom? What's happening? I have no idea what's going on. And like other parts, you're like, I mean, are these two boys just crazy? What's happening? It's just kind of a, like, I don't want to say all over the place, because it's not really all over the place, but, like, I don't know.
It's not traditional. It's not a traditional.
It's also not in English.
It's also not in English.
Not in English.
Dave, Connie, what did you guys think?
This movie makes me distrust children, mostly my own. Connie and I did a little test to make sure that I was really her dad in the event that something like this would happen. We would have certain key exchanges that she would know were only exclusive to us.
I
think that's what this mother really lacked.
Yeah. I think that's something I didn't like about this movie, because I feel like if I was in that scenario, my child didn't believe that I was their mom, I would be, like, saying random facts, like, you had the soccer game when you were 12, like, facts to make sure that, mm-hmm. to, like, instill that you are the mom. So it's kind of weird that she wasn't doing that,
yeah.
which might make you think that she isn't the mom. So the first time I watched the movie, it was a lot scarier because they really painted the mother, like, they showed certain things to kind of misdirect you to think it is the mother.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they would just show these weird clips of her doing weird stuff. Yeah. And it made you think she was the villain, and I think that made it so much more scary because they're just living with someone who isn't their mom. And mm-hmm. I thought that was really yeah. scary to me the first time I watched it.
Very scary. Very sadistic. There's some pretty hard, to me, some pretty, almost bordering on the torture porn in this one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually pretty similar to The Lodge, which the same filmmakers made after this. You can see that this is a predecessor to The Lodge in a number of ways. I think the family trauma as horror thing at this point, this is 2014, so I'm not lumping this movie in, but it's become, like, a little bit played out to me just in its obviousness. Like, it's not really new that a lot of good horror is really about family trauma
mm-hmm.
as the greatest horror. You know, that's not really new, but I guess a lot of people have discovered the idea now, and so you have a lot of these movies, and they think it's so brilliant that they thought of this that they call it elevated horror. So, I, you know, at this point, a little bit tired, I thought, with that stuff. I love the cockroaches as pets. What the hell was that about?
Oh, disgusting.
Yeah, I didn't like that.
That was not okay.
I'm wondering if, Nora, would you like to have some of those if your dad brought home a jar as pets?
No.
Would that be fun?
No. Ooh. I would, no.
And also remember the weird thing we noticed is they go into this cave, and it's filled with skulls, and they just find, like a half-dead cat in there. And they never really explain that part. Like, why is there a cave full of skulls?
That's weird.
That's because this takes place in Austria. And so they were in a cemetery, and during war times or back in the day, if you were a peasant or a poor person that couldn't afford a proper burial, they would literally just fill tombs with bodies, not in caskets.
That's scary.
Yeah.
Different cultures.
Yeah.
I think the two little boys are like East and West Germany or something, if you want to. Yeah, really, I don't know. There's some of that going on. That's astute answer by Kevin, because I actually was thinking about that too. At first I was like, wait,
yeah.
Skulls, because I had already seen the movie before and I forgot the skulls, but I think there's a little bit of that going on.
Mm-hmm.
See, I didn't know that history, so I was thinking that, well, these kids probably didn't kill all these people. Maybe the mom and dad have something to do with
yeah.
like the mass murderers and these kids are, you know, so the antagonist protagonist is very elusive.
Mm-hmm.
Good night, mommy.
Yeah, this movie, I feel like I just never guess the twists right. Like, I always think that I've got it in the bag when I first start watching it, and then by the end I'm like, I didn't see that coming, and then you guys are like, oh yeah, I saw that coming, like right when it started. I'm like, what, how? But yeah, it definitely those two little dudes escalated very quickly. It was like 1 second they're like, I don't know, like, mom's yelling at us. That's not like her, even though she just had major, you know, reconstruction surgery. Like, that's weird. Better tie her up.
Like,
it was like, and then so it went from that moment where they're just like trying to find out. I was like, well, I was still on their side at that point. I was like, they're just trying to figure out, like, if this is like a weird Twilight Zone thing, you know? And then he brought out like the magnifying glass, and I was like, oh, I don't know about that. And then he brought out the super glue, and I was like, what's happened now? So there was like, that was the point for me where there was like no going back, and I'm like, oh, I've been rooting for the wrong people.
And Nora looked at me. Nora just looked at me in horror. She was going, did they just super glue her mouth shut?
I mean, it would hurt. Like, yes. It's super glue. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't. I mean, I talk a lot, so that would not be helpful.
Yeah. And the eyes, too.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like the eyes, I noticed this time watching it that the eyes, I think, were candle wax. Because when she wakes up, they've surrounded her body with candles. And it doesn't quite look like as painful as glue. It almost looks like they...
No, because, yeah, I think you're right.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. There, she could open it.
So, so Dave's talking about the couple things. The accident, the dad, and then one of you mentioned... maybe a couple of you, the surgery was a result of the accident. All of those things are explained, kind of. The dad is still in the picture, they're just separated. And they kind of allude to the fact that the accident caused a rift in the family, which the relationship did not survive. Because when the kids find her computer and they're snooping on it, they find her trying to make an online dating profile. At one point, the kids say, Dad lets us play, not Dad let us play. And the surgery is entirely elective. There's one scene later in the movie where they're walking by one of the hallways, which, by the way, the house that they found this movie to shoot in is brilliant. Such a weird architectural design. But they're walking past a wall, and there's pinned up pictures of her face with pre-op designs on it, and there's no scarring, there's no nothing. And then in the beginning of the movie, when she first comes home and they're playing that game with the stickies on their forehead, and the boys are trying to make her guess that they put mom on her forehead, she keeps asking questions like, am I on TV? And they're like, yeah. Am I famous? And I like how they pause and like, well, sort of. So it gave me the vibe that she went and got this elective surgery, not necessarily out of being vain, but as some sort of a way to deal with the trauma of the accident and the loss of her marriage and potentially partly her career. So anyway, I don't think that was
spoilery. Wow, that's really interesting, Kevin. That never occurred to me. I just took it for granted that the surgery must have been related to the accident, but you're right. I mean, the bandaging and the recovery process is plastic surgery. Was it an accident that just like it only injured her cheekbones?
Right. Yeah. Exactly. I got in an accident. I gotta go get a smaller nose.
And it shows you. It shows you she's a like a local news anchor or something, or she's an anchor maybe of more prominence than that. She's on a show of some kind on TV. Wow. Good real detective work this week.
Well, full disclosure, I watched this last night from about 1 to 3 in the morning, and then again with Nora today in the afternoon. And when you watch this movie and you've seen the quote-unquote twist ending, and you can sort of let down your guard in that respect, there's a lot of things to notice. I don't know how spoilery you want to get, but... I noticed so many things, and I think I have the entire movie down pat. And I will say, if you go back and watch this, which I highly recommend, if it was just a recent watch, there's a scene at the end of this movie pertaining to the exterior of a house after a major event. Watch that very, very closely, and do not assume it is what you are seeing.
I think the second time I watched it, the ending, like the whole time, the first time I watched it, I was confused the whole time. But the second time I watched it, I was like, why was I confused? Like, they make it like obvious. I feel like when you watch it again, you see all these like signs that you didn't see before.
They do all of this with very little. Also, it reminded me a lot of The Reef. This is very spare, very slow, very modest. I would call it minimalism. There's only three characters. It's a one-spot location. The whole movie happens in one house. There's very little action, and there isn't really even exposition. Not much dialogue. It's a kind of a masterclass, in my opinion, of doing more with less. I mean, this is a movie that has so many places to go, and just as we were starting to get into, like, I'm sure there's a whole cottage industry of, like, Reddit conspiracy theories about this movie, and there's so much going on. We talked about some of the political implications that they may or may not be playing with, being where they are in the history of Austria and Germany, but all of that is done with so little that it's pretty amazing to me.
So we had mentioned before that we had completely dissed Children of the Corn. It's the first time that we've actually just had a mutiny. I think it's because the kids. Sometimes these 80s movies don't hold up. But when the movie, when Goodnight Mommy started, and the kid is running through the cornfield, Connie was convinced that Kevin had somehow hacked the internet and just made it so Children of the Corn
everywhere.
Yeah, just plays no matter what you click on.
That is following me.
So we actually did a real corn maze yesterday up here. We are at camp in northern Maine, literally near the border of Canada. And there's a farm that has a massive cornfield, and they carve it into something different. So from an aerial view, you can see what it is you're running through. And this year, it is a giant corn maze of Donald Trump and Joe Biden's heads. And as you go through the corn maze, you learn various facts about the Republican and Democrat Party. And if you complete it, you get a free ice cream. But I loved the fact that you guys had just performed a full mutiny on my original pick. And here I am about to walk into a corn maze. And I was like, I bet Dave's in here and he's going to kill me.
Well, I was wondering if Nora had the impulse to kill you at any point after seeing these movies and then ending up in a corn maze.
I mean,
she wanted to leave pretty
yeah,
quickly.
Yeah, I was like, this is a little.
I mean, I know very little about corn mazes, but if I was a kid and I was put in a corn maze, I'd be like, oh, this is the place where you kill adults.
Yeah,
I would be
right?
Scared.
Sure.
This is the place
I'm
where
scared.
You
I think
die.
We're scary.
Yeah.
This is the place where you
corn.
Either die or kill somebody. Like, there's no in between.
So speaking of the twist in Goodnight Mommy, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that it's a really obvious twist. Mm-hmm. If you're a reasonably well-versed horror veteran, you're going to start at least thinking this early on. I'm also going to say it's a rare movie where the twist actually doesn't matter. I don't think it's fair to even call it a twist, because I think a twist is a movie that's leaning very heavily upon its effect on the viewer. Whereas in Goodnight Mommy, I think it's a rare movie where they throw a quote-unquote twist at you, and it has no bearing on the overall effect of the movie.
I mean, after you, like, find the twist, you kind of look at the movie differently. You're like, oh, it was pretty obvious the whole time. But, like, before, like, seeing it, you're just kind of, like, oblivious to the fact that, like, it's pretty obvious, like, the twist is there.
Well, if you don't have a twist, then the mother really is a monster. You know, like, she would be incredibly cruel and vindictive.
So I think
if you didn't have a twist, it kind of changed her complexion quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's
why I think relationship with her sons, you know.
No, I disagree. I think you can even go back and rewatch the film, and you can convince yourself. You could watch this film 3 times in a row, and find enough things in it that you could convince yourself of 3 different legit scenarios that are going on.
Mommy of the week for me. I thought she was pretty. I liked her with the bandages and all that. I like a scary girl. Although it was very frustrating for me. It was actually very frustrating for me that she didn't fight back more.
Mm. Yeah.
Like when she was like making that bed in the scene, I would have destroyed my kid if he did that to me.
And that was after they like tortured her.
Yeah. I know, like I would have been done with it. Like
at least knock him out.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It just shows that she doesn't have the constitution to parent her kid enough. That this is a red flag if they're tying you up and burning your face with magnifying glasses. Mm-hmm. Again, the kids' movies with the unorthodox childlike weapons. The magnifying glass was an amazing weapon in this movie.
The little crossbow they had.
Yeah, the nails or the pencils.
I feel like at that point you're talking about like the point where the children were torturing her. It was so much more than what they were doing before. And then how she was so like easy with them after made you really rethink who was the villain at that point. Because leading up to it, it was the boys were kind of like being, you know, I don't want to say abused, but like the mom was being mean to them, but only to a certain extent. But she wasn't mean when it came to them torturing her. That she was still kind of kind and easy with them. So it made you think like, who is the villain now?
Well, I mean, in retrospect, I would argue that she wasn't mean at all.
No, not mean enough.
Well, she like strangled him in the beginning.
She jumped on top of him. I don't know if she strangled
like
him.
Like the neck thing. I don't know. And also, like at the beginning, she wouldn't feed the other child. You know what I mean? So that could be
the theory,
considered mean, depending how you look at it.
So, like, when like you're talking about like how like it wasn't like abuse, like she wasn't mean enough to them. I felt bad for Elias at a couple points because like you could tell like he was like rethinking this whole thing. Like at the one point where he was like looking for the contacts and like from when they were looking at the video and like the brown eyes thing, and like it was just kind of like you like make. They make you, like, feel bad for him at some points, especially, like, when the mother was, like, hitting him, like, in his bunk bed, like, after, I don't know what.
I think they found the cat in the lighter.
Oh, yeah, she found the cat in, like, the lighter and stuff. And, like, he had, like, gone like that to her to, like, distract her. And then she was, like, hitting him and, like, they make you feel bad for Elias, like, before, like, the whole thing. And then you're, like, oh, well,
it's a bit much.
If this wasn't in Austrian, if this was in English, I would have for sure thought that the name Elias was a play on words for alias.
Ooh.
That was a theory I had at one point, and I thought I was a genius, and then kind of was like, it's an Austrian, stupid. And then I started trying to spin her head around, like, well, Latin, the original word. And she
like,
then...
Google it.
Yeah, she just destroyed me with Google.
Kevin, let's go. Dig up. I want 2 minutes on the origin of Elias, whatever his name was.
Elias versus... Well, in Greek. So, Trent, I'm curious. I found an article. I'm going to butcher this guy's name. Peter Subzinski. Writing for RogerEbert.com, and it's hard to find a bad review of this movie, by the way. It's a critical darling. But he compares this film to the works of Michael Haneke.
Well, they have the Austrian harshness in common. There's a lot of, in my mind, the Eastern European films, especially from Austria and Germany, have similar dynamics and similar feels sometimes, and so I definitely got that out of this. The family trauma in Michael Haneke, that's like his calling card, although it's not obviously genre horror generally, but yeah, a lot of similarities there. Harsh peoples. They're very harsh peoples.
Yeah, I thought it was a lot like Fight Club. Like, wow. if you watch the movies kind of the same. Like, you go through a certain narrative, but then at the end, you rethink how you're watching the movie. And, like, the second time, you watch it completely different. I think that movie is very similar to this one in that way.
Yeah, and it's kind of hard to enjoy as much the second time because it's like once you've seen it, it's like one of those visual puzzles where you're supposed to, like, unfocus or whatever. Once you've seen it, it's impossible to unsee, so... When you watch it again, it's like, I don't know. It's like, how did you not know from the beginning? It's kind of hard to imagine getting fooled. I'm pretty sure it did fool me, though. I don't think I guessed the twist until the end. So, good job.
I really enjoyed it the second time. Oh, well, I've seen it 3 times now, but I really enjoyed it more each time because of the things Kevin was talking about, like the little clues. Like, you have to watch every single frame because there's information even in things that you think there's nothing there for you. It's just like, why are they showing this wall?
Yeah.
But there's a reason for every single shot.
And I will say, it's really important in subsequent viewings that the post scene is incredibly important to what's really going on. So in this movie, pay very close attention every time something kind of weird or off happens. Watch the immediate scene they cut to next, and it sort of helps lay the groundwork for what I at least think is really happening in Goodnight Mommy.
You had a very classic, I guess, I don't know if it's American or not, but you had the very classic near save in this when the Red Cross shows up. And they, the near save is played for all the suspense and drama that it's worth. Thought they did a nice job with that.
There's two near saves. There's the tripwire one, too.
Oh,
that hurts.
That was horrible.
That has gotten me.
Like right in the braces.
That has gotten me every. And you're right, Trent. The near saves are done so well that the tripwire has gotten me every time I've watched this movie. And I'm well aware, but I'm so caught up in the scene that I'm like, you know, it's like Titanic. Like, just get on the board, Jack.
Yeah.
You're going to make it.
I know. Every single time. I remember we even were watching it like, you got it, go. Even though we knew the ending. We were still cheering.
There's tripwire in Becky, too. There's a tripwire scene in each movie. The tripwire scene in Goodnight Mommy, for my money, much better. I thought that was one of the less convincing scenes of Becky, how that worked.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And for family drama, this came out the same year as another movie that we were considering, which was 2014's The Babadook. So, good year for kid horror, 2014. Yeah. Nice job.
I'd like to know if Connie and Nora learned any lessons from these movies or from tonight, from being on the show, your podcast debut for both of you, I presume. Say that again.
Don't let strangers in your house. Don't do it.
Well, you didn't know that before these movies? I've done a great job.
I did.
Well, something I learned was anything can be a weapon. Because in a lot of these movies, their weapons were taken away from them or they didn't have any around them, but they still ended up being pretty violent.
That's a great lesson to take. I'm glad you did this. Connie, one time you gave me some words of wisdom that you passed along to me from someone else at school, I think, maybe. And this is a long time ago, but I always remembered you said, you get what you get and you don't get upset. And it stayed with me. It stayed with me to this day. Like, that's how I try to conduct myself. And I think we're both disciples of that school. So thanks for that.
Oh,
you're welcome.
So tender.
Well, great job, girls. Thanks for coming on the show. You guys should come on again.
Yeah, good job, guys.
Yeah, great job.
Love to have you guys back. You have an open invitation for me.
Keep on watching horror movies.
Yeah, absolutely.